Shabbat Shalom, and Nacho is making her, or his, it's a him, yeah, it is a him, his debut here. We're outside, the lighting's terrible today because of the winter and everything, and we got six baby goats out here, so this is Nacho, and Nacho, wave at the camera. Those of you that are on audio, well, sorry about that. You want to say hi? Huh? You want to say hi? You're not going to say anything? You going to eat my microphone? Okay, you probably won't say anything up here. So, you guys don't understand. You know, we're outside, finally out of the office, and this is the setting that we prefer to be in. The lighting is terrible during this time of year, so you're going to have to bear with that. But I'll give you a little treat here and let you see one of the goats. I know a lot of you enjoy that. And if you might be able to see behind me occasionally, there's some others. I'm taking my life into my own hands today for you guys. That I could at any moment be overrun by baby goats, all right? So go back and tell them to behave, okay? All right, Nacho goat. Get her sister named Salsa. We're praying for triplets. We could have one named Chip. Okay, see you, Nacho. All right, well, with that, I'm sinking into the ground. No telling what's going to happen today. Some great news. Of course, Joe Biden, the vice president, is in Israel. I talked to Paul Sherbo on IFBN radio the other day, and I told him he could keep him. You know, if Israel wants to keep Joe Biden, as far as I'm concerned, how many of you would vote with me for that? All right, just go ahead and keep Biden. If you like him, we have a few others we can give you. Take yours back. Okay, but the big news this week, and this is exciting, this is just incredible. There's a link on our newsletter for this. If you don't get the newsletter, email me. Sign up for the newsletter. Email me. I'll send you a link. The Hurva Synagogue is scheduled to be dedicated this coming Monday. All right. On the rabbinic calendar, the eve of the first month of the year, and we're going to be talking about that when we get in the Torah portion. The synagogue is going to be dedicated. Any of you that have been to Israel, you know that the Jewish quarter where the big arch was at one time, that is now the Hurva Synagogue. And the exciting thing is there was a rabbinic prophecy years ago. I don't know if it's going to come true or not. Well, let you know as the news comes forth here in the coming weeks. But there was an ancient prophecy that that as the Hurva Synagogue was being built, that it would be destroyed twice, it would be rebuilt after each one of the destructions, and after it was rebuilt for the third, or built for the third time, rebuilt for the second, this time, that after that the temple would be built in Israel. Is it going to be? Is this going to be the prophetic timetable? Is this one of the events? We don't really know, but with everything else that's going on around us, you know, to have this thing reopened is to me just beyond description. And there is Ruth Sheva is the one that did this little few minute documentary on it, and it was done by Yoni Kempinski. Of course, those of you that have been to Shoreshim in the Old City, you know the names Moshe and Dov Kempinski. Yoni is Moshe's son. Did a great job on the interview. Go see it, listen to it, watch it. And if you can't get excited about that one, something is wrong. Of course, with this new moon, we will be looking toward Passover. And there is the group of the Karaites in Israel. They are looking this week, this coming week, for the Aviv barley, to see if that will coincide with the rabbinic calendar. I pray it does. If it doesn't, well, we're going to have two different calendars this year, and we're going to have our unity tested. Well, it's just the way it goes. It would be great if we did see in the end that everything lined up and that we could go off of the off of this being the first of the year. Now, we're going to be in Exodus chapter 35, verse 1 through chapter 40, verse 38. 1 Kings chapter 7, verse 51 through chapter 8, verse 21. 1 Samuel chapter 19, 20, and 21. A little cloud cover back there should help me with our video today. So, don't know how long it's going to be. Now, with Exodus chapter 35, we got a double Torah portion this week. And it starts out in just the right manner for me to go back and visit something that I talked about last week. And I don't know if I haven't gone back and listened to it exactly, whether I was misunderstood in it or just did a terrible job of communicating what I was what I believe. Either one, folks. I'd like to take a few minutes to clear something up. Hi, Hatsumi. That is my cup. It's not yours. Well, I want to go to Exodus chapter 35. Moshe assembled the whole community of the people of Israel and said to them, "These are the things which Adonai has ordered you to do. On 6 days, work is to be done. On the seventh day is to be holy for you, a Shabbat of complete rest in honor of Adonai. Whoever does any work on it is to be put to death. You are not to kindle fire in any of your homes on Shabbat." I talked last week about Shabbat, and got a little miscommunication or something going on. I am in no way condoning someone working on Shabbat. Hatsumi, you're going to have to leave, and you're probably not going to because you're a goat. I'm not in any way condoning someone working on Shabbat. I did say if you're a doctor, you're a nurse, you're an EMT, somebody like that, you know, you go to Mea Shearim in Israel, and in Mea Shearim, the ultra-Orthodox of Israel take the commandments of the Torah with just the letter of the law kills, to the point that if you are driving down the road with in an ambulance with someone in the back that you are taking to the hospital in order to save that person's life, they have been known through the years to throw rocks at that ambulance. I don't see that as the Torah. But what about everybody? What about other people that are out there today? What about people that, you know, maybe you're new into Torah, you've been working for a long time, you're just coming into this, you're having to work on Shabbat right now. Am I going to sit here and tell you that you need to quit that job? That, you know, you're not following the Torah, you're not walking in faith, and today you need to quit, never go back. You know something, folks? I am not willing to go there. I'm not willing to be the judge of another person. The only way that I should be willing to look at them and say, you need to quit that job today, is if I'm willing to also open my wallet and help them out in case they get fired. Now, with that, if you're a person that has to work, that is working on Shabbat right now, and I know I have people that come to me in conferences and said, you know, I'd like to be here tomorrow, and I know it's Shabbat, I have to work. There's a difference between somebody saying, you know, I have to work, I know what the commandment says, oh well, whatever, and another kind of person that comes to me, like I got an email this week from somebody that says, you know, they have some medical things happening, I'm not going to go into the details, but some medical things happening within their family. This person is working at a job that for a long time was requiring them to work every Shabbat, and they prayed about it, and now they're down to one Shabbat per month. And this person said to me in the email, I continue to pray, I continue to ask the Father to either do something in my life, to be able to change jobs, or to do something with the employer. They are continually praying about it. You know, I'm blessed that I don't have to answer that question right now. I haven't had to answer that question for a long time because, you know, I set my own schedule. I don't know. I would pray that I would have the strength that if I had to, you know, do something to support my family and was offered a job that was on Shabbat, I would pray that I would have the faith to step out there and say, no, I don't know. I'm not tested in that right now, okay? what I'm trying to say through all of this, and I'm probably not communicating any better this week than I was last week, that the Torah has grace. You know, it's not like kosher. Nobody's ever died for lack of shrimp. But at the same time, what about Shabbat? Okay? I'm not going to tell somebody to go and quit their job. What I will tell somebody is, why don't you go and talk to your employer and say, you know, for religious reasons, I would like to be moved from Saturday. Okay, I'll work Sunday, I'll work Christmas, I'll work Easter, I'll work Halloween if you need me to. But I, for religious reasons, need to have Friday night and Saturday off. Now, if the employer says no, you have a choice. You can either continue or you can walk away from the job, one of the two. Now, this is where I guess some are going to disagree with me. I'm not going to tell a person just to walk away from the job unless the father tells them to do so, because it may be that the father is wanting to take them on a journey of faith instead of immediate action of faith. I hope you understand what I'm saying in this. You know, when we go back in the scriptures, it talks about the manna, the two jars of manna. We see right here that it says that anyone who does any work on Shabbat is to be put to death. You want to go by the strict letter of the law, then you're going to be, anybody that's working on Shabbat, you're going to have to put them to death. And by the way, that's against the law of the United States and Europe and most civilized countries. So, we've got to look at this thing of how can we best deal with the scriptures today. Now, if we go back to into Exodus, and we see that in Exodus chapter 16, Moses said, after the people had gone out on Shabbat, and they had tried to find the manna, what do? He didn't stand up and say, if you go out of your house tomorrow, you're going to be put to death. No. He said, let 2 quarts of manna be kept through all your generations, so they will be able to see the bread which I fed you in the desert when I brought you out of Egypt. There was grace before there was judgment. Understand? There was grace before there was judgment. There was a period in which Moses said, Adonai was told Moses, put the jars of manna up in front of the people so they will see my faithfulness. But then if they refuse my faithfulness, there was a time in which judgment would come. I guess the difference that I'm going to have with some folks is I see that there is grace to move a person out of something in the Father's timing. Okay? I hope we're on the same page. If you disagree, that's fine. You know, I'm not trying to sit here every week and tell you that I'm right, you're wrong. What I am doing is just teaching it to the best of my ability on a weekly basis. And please, please feel free to email me questions, comments, your disagreements. That's fine. It's okay. One more thing before we go on is in chapter 16, it says, Adonai, and this is verse 28, Adonai said to Moshe, how long will you refuse to obey the mitzvot and teachings? Look, Adonai has given you the Shabbat. This is why he is providing bread for 2 days on the sixth day. Each of you, stay where you are. No one is to leave his place on the seventh day. Now, there are a number of people, and I'm not going to judge you, okay? But I'm going to teach it the way that I see it. There are a number of people that have decided that since you're said right here, you're not to leave your place on the Shabbat, that they don't go to congregational meetings on Shabbat. I don't see this. It does not say do not leave your home on the Shabbat. It says in Hebrew, and I checked this with Paul Sherbo, it says do not leave your place. Now, were the people to stay in their tent? Or were they to stay within the boundaries of their tribe? Or were they to stay within the boundaries of the camp? I guess it just really depends on how you interpret that word, is it not? So, what does it mean for us today? By the way, if we go over to Acts chapter 15, And it says these are the four things that the Gentiles were to do. And then it is followed by the fifth commandment. Will they not hear the teaching of the Torah of Moses every week in the synagogues? Well, if they weren't to leave their house and go to a congregation, a synagogue, to listen and hear the Torah, then I guess, see, something's not quite lining up here. So if you decide, you know, not to go to, you know, out of your house on Shabbat, that's up to you, folks. Don't judge somebody else for taking that verse. What is your place? Is it your home? Is it your community? This verse has been has been argued for centuries of where is your place. Is it if you're in a community? Is it your the boundaries of your community, your neighborhood, your city, a tank of gas? I don't know. Each person has to come to the place of deciding within them their own selves. And then we are not to judge others as long as they are trying to follow the commandments. When we need to walk in judgment is like the man that we'll see in the book of Numbers, who, though he saw the jars of manna, though he heard the commandment not to kindle a fire, he still went out and did it, and it was rebellion. And because of that, he was stoned to death. Okay, we're going to move on from there. Exodus chapter 35, verse 5, we see the third offering. Some people say this is a continuation of the first offering. I think it's the third one. Excuse me. For anybody that did not give willingly in the first offering, maybe they gave willingly in the second one, which ended up being a golden calf. And here we see that there's another opportunity for the people to get their hearts right. And we see verse 35 through verse 19 is an overall view of the tabernacle. Now, remember that this week is the time that the Hervah Synagogue is being dedicated, and we're looking here at the final things as far as the tabernacle. The Hervah Synagogue is not of the level of the tabernacle or temple, but the prophetic significance there, at least there's some parallels. In chapter 35, verse 10 through verse 19, we see something that will throw most English teachers into a tizzy. And that is, we have a sentence that goes on for like 9 or 10 verses. Chapter verse 10 through verse 19. It is one sentence. Anybody that knows anything about English or Hebrew, you don't make a sentence that long. But this, it is the longest sentence that I've ever read, the longest one that I see in the Scripture. And it because and the reason for it being one sentence is because the tabernacle was to be seen as an echad, as the different things that are there. It is one message in the end. Now, chapter 35, verse 20 through 29, we will read about the people came, the whole community of the people of Israel withdrew from Moses' presence, and they came, everyone whose heart stirred them and everyone whose spirit made him willing, and brought Adonai's offering for the work on the tent of meeting, for the service in it, and for the holy garments. And we read about, I just go through and slowly read those next verses, and you can almost feel the sense of repentance and the sense of awe. And I think that it was an offering that was done with tears in the people's eyes. I think that when they came and said, the Father has given us another chance. And in there, I just saw the kind of the heart of the people to give unto this offering. In fact, to the place that it is said in chapter 36, verse 5, the people were bringing far more than was needed for the work that had been done. And this has been one that's been abused by many people in churches that are standing up giving about an offering. When's the last time that you saw this? When is the last time you saw this? You know, go back to the person that's working on Shabbat right now and doesn't see a way out of it. Well, maybe if people would start to give the way that people are supposed to give, maybe we could make a a bit of a safety net for folks to bring them from one place to another. See, maybe it's not the person that's working on Shabbat that is the real problem here. Maybe it's the lack of giving by people that is causing us to not be able to walk in the community that that we are supposed to be. Just kind of leave that as a thought with you. Now, from 37 on through about 39, I'm not going to go back over these scriptures. We see the beauty of the tabernacle. Don't fall into the trap of just reading through this thing so fast that you miss out on the beauty, the details, the everything that was going on in the tabernacle, the meanings, the prophetic significance, the shadows. It's just absolutely overwhelming when you start to look at this. But remember, it is about one message. Okay, it's not about a menorah, and it's not about an altar. It's about one message, which is the redemption of mankind, bringing His presence back among us. And then we come to this beautiful verse in chapter 39, starting in verse 42. The people of Israel did all the work, just as Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh had ordered Moshe. Moshe saw all the work, and there it was. They had done it. Exactly as Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh had ordered, they had done it. And Moshe blessed them. These are some of my favorite words in all of the scripture, because I can just imagine the heart of Moses on that day. You know, he's gone through a lot with these people, and he will go through even more. But it was a rare opportunity that he could stand there, and he could be proud of these people. And I figure the father was proud of them too, that he looked and he saw all the implements, all the things that had been made for the tabernacle. They had done it. They had come together, and there it was in their midst. And he stood there, dumbfounded, that these people had actually been able to accomplish this task. You know, when we will put our disagreements aside, and we will work as a team, there's nothing we can't do in Him, folks. It's just going to be, and this is, you've heard me talk about this in this month's message on that I've done, End Times, The Missing Link. If you haven't ordered it, order a copy of it. I talk about the reasons for, one of the main reasons for this greater Exodus thing, the time of Jacob's trouble, is to get some of the dysfunction out of the family. Okay, I'm not calling you dysfunctional and me perfect, by the way. I read in Psalm last week that in the Psalms that the Torah is perfect. And when I read that, I understand Torah is perfect. I'm not. Okay, and neither are. And there's nobody here that's listening this week that is perfect. The Torah is perfect. And we together is what I'm saying. The time of Jacob's trouble is about taking the dysfunction out of the family. Because the last thing that is needed today is for us to take the dysfunction of the diaspora and move it to Israel. We don't need that. He's doing a work in our midst. And he says, there it was. They had done it. It was accomplished. And it says then in verse 3 of chapter 40, put in the tabernacle, the ark for the testimony, and conceal the ark with the curtain. Now, down in verse 21, we'll see the same concept here. Then he brought the ark into the tabernacle, set up the curtain as a screen, and concealed the ark for the testimony as Adonai had ordered Moshe. There's a teaching that is, I believe it's in the Talmud, that says that this curtain was more like a veil, or the word says here, a screen, and that standing outside of the tabernacle, if you were there at the altar of sacrifice, and the gate, the draperies of that were on the going into the holy place, if they were opened, that you would have been able to see all the way from the altar of sacrifice into the Holy of Holies and the mercy seat that was there, because it was just a veil. It was a screen. It was not totally concealing it. It was giving a bit of a, I hate to use this word, but it's about the only one that comes to mind right now, a mystical effect, that you knew that there was something there, and there was woven the cherub and the cherubim, and it would remind you that which is behind this curtain is that which was taken away by the fall of man, and would remind us of the cherubim that would stand with the flaming swords that had that were protecting the entrance into the Garden of Eden. And so it is said that this was just this veil. But over the centuries, as the tabernacle would eventually give way to Solomon's temple and then the second temple, eventually what happened is they kept on adding to the veil, to where at the time of Messiah, that veil had become a curtain that was some 6 inches thick and weighed like 300 pounds, I think it was. I don't have my notes on that. It took, I'm told it took like 60 priests just to hang the curtain. It was something that nobody could see through. It provided total darkness, unless the glory was in the Holy of Holies, of course. But it was so thick that you could no longer see into the Holy of Holies and see what sin had done. Instead, there was a man-made curtain there. Isn't that just about what we see today? How man-made traditions and laws have keep us away from His presence? He desires His presence to be thinly veiled. Of course, we know when Messiah, when he breathed his last breath upon an execution stake, that veil was actually torn down from top to bottom. He does not desire us to have to go through man-made traditions in order to find His presence, because man-made traditions will never allow you to see into His presence. Now, some of my other favorite scriptures is in the last chapter of Exodus, and it says this: "Finally, he erected the courtyard around the tabernacle and the altar and set up the screen for the entrance to the courtyard." Verse 34, "The cloud covered the tent of meeting. The glory of Adonai filled the tabernacle. Moses was unable to enter the tent of meeting because the cloud remained on it, and the glory of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh filled the tabernacle." If these verses that I just read do not do something inside of you, there's something wrong. There's just something wrong inside of you. There's a place of your life that you've let grow cold, or a place of your life that has never just even been redeemed in the first place. Moses stood there. The people stood there. They had done all they could do. There were 6 implements in the tabernacle. 6. You've heard me teach on the tabernacle, and I'll be doing that, God willing, up in Colorado, in Monte Vista, Colorado, in April. I think it's the 17th. Come up there and join us for the day. But there were 6 implements in the tabernacle. 6 is the number of man. 6 is not a complete number. 7 is a complete number. See, the message is so clear. The people had done all they could. They had done the best they could do, but they could do no more. And they stood there. Something is missing in the tabernacle. What is it? What is missing here? And all of a sudden, the cloud started to move. Think about it. Imagine this. The cloud started to move. And it came over on top of the tabernacle, the tent of meeting, the holy place, the tent that was inside the outer court. And it sat there. And I wonder, as I read this morning, I've never thought of this before, but I wonder if possibly the cloud stopped for a moment. And the people may have thought, wow, maybe we did something wrong. Maybe we cut that wrong. Maybe we measured wrong. But maybe it was this is just my thoughts, folks. This is just something I'm just going to pass on to you. I'm not teaching this as doctrine or anything. But maybe it was that the cloud came and stopped for a moment because the Father said, "This is what I've been waiting for." It's like, have you ever, you know, you get a, here's the best one I have right now. You ever gone to a restaurant and they bring these desserts and that, you know, you see this dessert and you, just your mouth waters and they say, "Well, we'll be back with it," you know, and they wait like an extra 10 minutes to bring it, you know, and by that time you're drooling all over your table and you got your napkin there and stuff. And then the dessert is brought to you. And you look at it, and instead of going fart and just diving into it, you take your fork and you just go, "This is going to be good. This is going to be good." And you just take a moment to savor the moment before you indulge. And I think that maybe there was a moment in time that the glory came, the Shekinah came and rested above the tabernacle for a moment, as the Father said, this is what I've been waiting for. And he savored the moment before he entered into the tabernacle. And of course, prophecy, today, our body, our being, we are the tabernacle of the living Elohim. Corinthians talks about this. Paul uses the word temple. I believe he would use the word tabernacle if he was speaking to a group of Hebrews. And he said to them, "You are the temple, the tabernacle of the living Elohim." That he desires not to just live among us, dwell among us, but his desire is to live in us. Now, see that the glory came. The glory came in such a way that Moses was unable to enter into the tent of meeting. Moses, burning bush guy, standing in his presence, looking at, you know, the backside, how to say that, as he stood in the cleft of a rock, you know, and this guy is not outside of the glory experience, right? He's been around this thing a little while, and it came. His glory came in such a way that Moses was unable to enter into the tent of meeting because his glory was so incredibly strong in that moment. And it bears a question. If the glory resided in a tabernacle built with the hands of man like that, how much more should it reside in a tabernacle built not with the hands of man, but built in the image of the living Elohim himself? Think about it. Consider it. How far below are we living today from that glory? And maybe, I believe, that it is his mercy. It is his mercy that he is not, that he is waiting. Or see, as an old acquaintance, Dick Rubin, used to say, I guess he still does, when the pattern is right, the glory will fall. Maybe it's because the glory has been withheld because our pattern's not right. For see, if he enters into with this kind of Shekinah, this kind of glory, this kind of a filling of his spirit, if he were to enter into our tabernacles today like this and find in there an Easter egg, his judgment would consume us in a moment. If he was to enter into us and find a Christmas tree, his judgment, the curse of the Torah, would have to consume us in a moment. But he is faithful. He is faithful. I dare say not a one of us, including me, looked at the Torah the first time and got it all right immediately. It is his grace that has allowed us to walk along. I can tell you today that it's getting faster and faster, that what took us, used to take us a year to do, is taking some people a week. They're getting their lives straight. We are getting our pattern right today so that his glory can come in our midst. Don't think for a moment, folks, that he is waiting just to taunt us. He's not waiting just to frustrate us, but he is waiting to fill us so that we may have an opportunity to get our lives in line with the Torah. Shabbat, tzitzit, many other things. Kosher, the feast and festivals. He's waiting for us to line up our lives in such a way that when his glory is poured out upon us, his judgment doesn't kill us. Well, there's a lot of stuff going on back there, isn't there? I don't know how much you guys can see. I'm kind of looking at my monitor here. You don't have the big... I got a bunch of ducks over here, too. They've probably been walking around behind me. Okay. Has nothing to do with it, but you heard the goat screaming in the side. Let us each take coming to the end of Exodus. We've gone through quite a journey here. Remember Exodus chapter 1, the children of Israel were in bondage. And it took 40 chapters and a lot of time for the people to come to the place that the Father could dwell in their midst. He's willing to give us time to work through issues. Let's give each other time to work through them too. Now notice that it says that they set this tabernacle up, by the way, and it was the first day of the first month you were to set up the tabernacle, the tent of meeting. According to the rabbinic calendar, this coming Tuesday will be the new moon because they go off the dark moon today. They go off the conjunction or there's all kinds of... I'm not going to get into that whole thing. But that is the rabbinic calendar new moon. And the Hurva Synagogue is being dedicated off the rabbinic calendar the first day of the first month. I just wonder. We'll have to see, won't we? Okay. Now, we come to the end of Exodus. Next week we'll be beginning the book of Leviticus. But as we come to the end of Exodus, these words, Hazak, Hazak, Vinit, Hazak, be strong, and let us be strengthened. And what better segue would there be to go over to 1 Samuel, the words that are written of David before he is to become the king. We see in these verses, and these are familiar stories to many of us that have been in Sunday school through the years, but understand there's many people that have come into this understanding of Torah, and especially our children. I'm kind of concerned sometimes about our children that, we've got youth out here today that have gone from, year to year to year with the readings of Torah. Nobody has opened the Gospels to them. They've never heard the words of Yeshua. They've heard the word Yeshua here and there as a person, but they don't know because they've never read his words in the Gospels. They don't know what the controversy is about Paul because they've never read these words. They don't know the stories that will strengthen you that are in the books like Samuel and Kings. We pick up in chapter 19 that, the kingdom is being taken from David. It's a transition as is being given over to, is being taken from Saul and given over to David. And we see the jealousy of Saul as he makes some plans to kill David. And it's his wife that comes to his rescue this time. And it says in verse 12, so Michal let David down through the window and he left, fled, and escaped. Okay, that's pretty cool. His wife came to his rescue and off he goes, and he escapes from the hatred of Saul in this time. But then verse 13, Michal took the household idol, laid it on the bed, put a goat's hair quilt on its head, and covered it with a cloth. She took the household idol? Wait a minute. What's the king of Israel doing with household idols? I thought that Jacob, Rachel, kind of got in trouble for that. I thought that the Torah, which Saul was supposed to be reading, on a daily basis, and was supposed to actually have written a copy of it in his own handwriting. I thought that it said something about household idols. You know, I think it's in that Ten Commandments deal about making an image and bowing down to it. So what's the boy doing with a household idol? No wonder he's having his kingdom stripped from him. So, you know, and just whatever. Now, we go from that point, though, into this this story between David and Jonathan, which is just an intriguing story because it is the bond of two men who, and they were not gay, as some, I just about said something there, as some misled people have tried to say. How's that for politically correct? But this was a bond between two men, the man David and the man Jonathan. Guys, read through this. Read through these verses and do so slowly. And read through it with some thought. Because I tell you what, these are verses right here that tell us about a relationship that we as men need today. That if you're called to be a David, you need a Jonathan. If you're called to be a Jonathan, you need a David. That a tricord is not easily broken. And yes, guys, we've got our wife and, you know, and our children, our family. Men need relationships. Men need godly male relationships in order for us to be the person we're supposed to be, we're called to be. I go back to a thing of, I got a horse down here that I just was given not too long ago, I told you about. And Aliyah is teaching me so much. I did not understand when the people that gave her to me told me that she needed to, you know, well, she needed to be with the horses for a couple of years before she could come and be with me. I thought, well, you know, why not? She needs to bond to me. And I come to find out that she needed to learn how to be a horse first. And there's things about being a horse that I can't teach her. And so she needed to be with the horses in order for the horses to teach her how to be a horse and then for me to take over from there. There's certain things about men being with men. There's certain things about women being with women. We need that bonding. It's the old thing of the ladies with the clotheslines. Used to be that the guy would go off to work. Ladies would stand and, you know, they'd put out the clothes on a daily basis and they would talk. And, of course, you know, men say this many words, you know, like, you know, a few words. And women say this many words, a lot of words. And, you know, what happens now is that most ladies are, you know, they don't get that opportunity to bond with other women. Men don't get that opportunity to bond with other men. Look at these verses in that we're reading here in David, as far as David and Jonathan. You pray for a person to come into your life that will fulfill that need that you have. And ladies, when some guy comes in as he's, you know, kind of fulfilling a need in your husband's life, don't get jealous. Now, guys, on the other hand, you know, I'm not much for this guys' night out thing, you know, every week. You're to leave your father and mother and cling to your wife, all right? Not cling to your best friend, okay? So balance that thing out. Now, here, a few more minutes. We see in here, of course, a little teaching on the new moon. This will be the new moon this coming week. It's in verse chapter 20, verse 5. David answered Jonathan, "Look, tomorrow is Rosh Kodesh, and I ought to be dining with the king." And then it says in verse 18, Jonathan said to him, "Tomorrow is Rosh Kodesh. You will be missed because your seat will be empty." They had a special meal the day after the sighting of the new moon, is the way that I see it today. And there we get the one of the very few teachings that we have on the new moon is right there in those pages. Now, lastly, let's go over to, chapter 20. 1, I think it is. Yeah, 21. And as, now David is running from the king, right? David is running from Saul, And as he's doing this, he comes in. I'm going to pick up right around verse 8 or so, and you can read the whole context. David, verse 9, David said to Achimelech something there. Why don't these people have normal names? Perhaps you have here a spear, a sword. I brought neither my sword nor my other weapons because the king's mission was urgent. You're warm. The king said, the sword of Goliath, the Philistine you killed is in the Elah Valley, is over there behind the ritual vest, wrapped in a cloth. If you want it, take it. It's the only one here. David said, there's nothing like it. Give it to me. Hi. I don't remember who you are. I think this is Keeley. Yeah. Hi, Keeley. So, look at this. As he's running, how many can do this? You know, pet a goat and teach at the same time. Moses could have done that. Okay, you want to get them? You want to come up? Okay, come here. All right, come on. Oh, you're heavy. This is Keeley's brother, I think. I don't know who you are. You have to ask Kathy about that. So, okay, that's enough. Get up. As David is running from the king, okay, as he's running for his life, he's got to be wondering, what in the world is going on here? I'm anointed to be king, and the king that's there tried to kill me, and here he is running away. His faith has got to be just stretched to the max. And what does he happen to come upon? Somebody that knows where the sword of Goliath is, and he offers it to him. David had come full circle in his faith at that point in time, a time that he needed some strengthening. This is why I was talking, be strong, let us be strengthened. David needed something that would strengthen him, his faith to continue on. And what did the Almighty provide for him? He provided the sword of Goliath that had put him into the position, put David into the position he was in the first place. What was the Almighty doing? He was saying, David, listen to me, I'm in control. I brought you here. You've got another Goliath to face. But just as I helped you kill the first one, I'm going to help you take care of this one. See, his faithfulness in the past, his faithfulness that we have seen in the past, gives us strength for the present. Notice I did not say that his strength, his faithfulness in the past, in the past, gives us strength for our future. I said his faithfulness, the things he's been faithful in the past, give us strength for today. Because if he gives me strength for today, I don't need strength for tomorrow. I need strength to live today. And he gives me strength today, then when I get to tomorrow, it's going to be today. And he's going to give me strength for another day. Because his blessings, his strength, his anointing is new every single day. All right. Covered a lot of ground there. And I pray that I got that straightened out a little bit on Shabbat. Again, if you're in a job, you know, I would say to you, go into your employer. Tell them, for religious reasons. You know, people are scared right now about those types of things because that's a lawsuit. For religious reasons, I need to have this day off. If they tell you no, it's up to you. But I will never stand in judgment for your decision. In fact, what I'll do is, if you'll email me or call me, I'll help you pray through it. Okay? So, all right. Keeley, you ready to say bye? All right. Nacho said hello. And Keeley, okay. You got into my microphone there, kid. All right. Next week, I won't be in the goat pasture, okay? I'll be outside of it. All right. Shavuot Tov. Have a wonderful, blessed, and prosperous week. And by next week, we should have two more goats. See you then. Yivarechach Adonai v'yishmarecha Ya'er Adonai panav elecha
ויחונך. יישא אדוני פניו אליך וישם לך שלום.